Welcome to the Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to the laboratory accreditation industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you'd like to tune into our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjlabs.com or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Oh, and good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you're logging to. My name is Mike Kramer. I am the calibration at Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation. I will be presenting today on a review of the upcoming revisions to PJLA policy PL-4, Scopes of Accreditation. This presentation was also put together by Matt Sika, who is a program manager at PJLA, who unfortunately, Matt was intending to be online with us today. However, due to circumstances beyond his control, he's unable to join us. However, I do have on the line with me Tracy Sorensen, who has been very instrumental in putting our updated PL4 together. And she'll be sitting in for Matt and primarily presenting during the testing reference material proficiency testing medical portion of this presentation. Again, welcome. Thank you for joining us. So we're in the process, and we're very shortly, hopefully we'll be sending out an update notification. Our policy, PL4. Which we've always had a PL4 for as long as I've been at Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation. However, it was my domain as program manager for calibration. It was specific to calibration scopes. This is now going to be an expanded policy, which is going to also require, which is also going to include requirements for scopes of accreditation to include testing labs under 17025. Inspection, proficiency testing, reference material producers, and also medical. So PL4 scopes of accreditation as an ILAC signatory, PJLA, we are required to comply with 17011. So that is a conformity assessment requires for accrediting bodies, accrediting conformity assessment body. So you folks that are subjected to our assessments and our accreditation, you are may see in our policies the term CAB or conformity assessment bodies. That are the organizations under our accreditation. So under 17011 subclause 8.2.1, as a requirement that the accrediting body makes publicly available information about the status of the accreditations, which shall be updated regularly. The role of the accreditation body is to ensure to an adequate degree of confidence that the conformity assessment body has the competence to offer the services defined in the scope. One thing I'm going to mention it here in PL4 under testing, it's going to be expanded where an organization can request a flexible scope. This will provide benefits to the organization to add a method, matrix, or analyte without having a request PJLA for an expansion to the scope, not including modifications or to methodologies. So the PL4 will be broken into different appendixes. So Appendix A will be calibration scopes of accreditation, which PL4 was, as I mentioned earlier, it was calibration scopes of accreditation. Now it's basically it's scopes of accreditation. So a lot of this was already incorporated in PL4. And they are in place. And this includes requirements such as defining the range of the calibration to include. It could be perhaps you're doing pressure, let's say in PSI. You could have a fixed point calibration, let's say 500 PSI, for example, just a fixed point. We also list in there, you can have a range beginning with the term up to and ending with a fixed value. So there's a lot of flexibility in there. However, it is understood that a non-zero low end of the range does exist. So, for example, you may see up to 500 PSI, which specifies a range anywhere between there, with the understanding that there is, in fact, somewhere a low end of the range. Or perhaps there is a third option where you want to define that low range, where you can define the low end of the range and the high end, perhaps 5 PSI to 500 PSI, for example, would fulfill that third option there. As always, we have a area for CMC, which is the calibration and measurement capabilities. So the CMC stated in the proposed scope or the existing scope is defined as the smallest uncertainty an organization can achieve within a scope of accreditation when performing a more or less routine calibration on a nearly ideal device being calibrated. So in other words, it's the smallest uncertainty that you can report. It's also noted in PL3, which is our policy on measurement uncertainty, and actually reporting measurement uncertainty to your customer, it is a requirement. You cannot report anything smaller than what is your what is stated on your current scope of accreditation under your calibration and measurement capabilities. Nothing new here. This has always been incorporated in PL4. CMCs can be expressed in one of three mathematical conditions. So again, you can have a fixed value, which will remain constant over the range. So let's say you're doing length, you're, let's keep it in inches here. You can have a range of 1 inch to 6 inches, and you may have determined the CMC to come out to be 25 micro inches, for example. Or you may establish a set of values that are linear, meaning that they vary in the approximate direction proportion to the increase in magnitude of the stated range. And PL4 does give examples of acceptable formats. For example, if we just go back to our inches, you could define your CMC as a linear range. So when you do that, you ideally would have your uncertainty budgets at the low end, at the middle end, and at the high end, therefore having a correlation between those three points, where you could have a floor value. Perhaps your CMC could be written as 15 micro inches, and you'll normally see plus so many micro inches per inch. It would be an example of a linear type of relative uncertainty equation. And lastly, an organization may propose an additional format from those that are listed in PL4. However, you would need to submit that to PJLA headquarters for approval prior to having your CMCs updated in that format. As always, significant digits, no changes there. Then CMC the expanded uncertainty as reported by the organization shall be no more than two significant digits. PL4 goes into the rules of rounding and stating that the CMC is at the two digits immediately following the last desired significant digits and shall be discarded if they are 5% or less of the last desired significant digits. So PL4 goes into various examples of rounding. And we actually, under the calculator tab on the PJLA website, pjlabs.com, we do have a calculator that will do that rounding for you. And it's available to anyone as a resource there on our website. So update here for PL4 in regards to calibration. We've added a new field. So it's going to be ionization, radiation, and radioactivity. So these are areas that were previously in the mechanical discipline. However, it was determined that they need to be isolated and from mechanical, and we've developed this new discipline. So some of examples of calibrations that are on our current scopes of accreditation that will be reorganized into this new discipline would include those folks that are doing ionization chamber survey meters, contamination instruments, nuclear gauges, radiation survey instruments, and area radiation monitor instruments. So this is a revision. This will be added to the calibration requirements here in Appendix A in PL4. As always, we have a section on equipment error reference standards being used. What are the standards or equipment that you're using to calibrate your instruments? We offer flexibility here. This can be specific. You can perhaps you're an electrical and you want to specify the make and model, such as the Fluke 5520A for electrical. Or if you're doing temperature, you could just basically, hey, you're using a standard thermometer, perhaps is your standard with a dry block to cover the range of temperature over under your scope of accreditation. pH buffers, or you're doing torque wrenches, what are you using? Hey, perhaps just torque transducers would be examples of items that would need to be captured in this area. Procedural information. So, it's been a few years ago when 17011 was revised and specifically addressed calibration. And it specifically calls out we need to start including methods or procedural information. We, when this came about, we sent out an update notification 48. So in this field, so this is basically what is the test measurement method or procedure utilized for each calibration? So again, that could be specific to a nationally recognized method, such as an ASTM method, or an ISO method, or you could reference your internal SOP or work instruction. The procedure, however, which is referenced on your scope, should be reflective of how the current ranges and CMCs were determined. Measurement instrument, quantity, or gauge. So basically, what is the instrument or gauge that's being calibrated? So recently we went through some of our scopes and we found folks that were just saying things like torque, pressure, voltage, for example. That is a property that's being measured. So it needs to be specific to an instrument or gauge. So torque, for example, torque wrenches, torque tools, or giving you flexibility equipment to measure torque. Pressure, you know, can't just say pressure. They have to be specific to perhaps it's a pressure gauge, pressure transducers, or perhaps it incorporates both of them. Voltage by itself, hey, it could be equipment to measure voltage or source voltage. So it has to be specific to the instrument or gauge that's being calibrated. And as always, PL4, we do have examples on all of our disciplines. Scopes of accreditation for calibration, and we did expand this to include our new discipline, ionization, radiation, and radioactivity. So this is an addition to PL4 that goes hand in hand with our new updated discipline that we've identified. All right, I'm going to continue here. That was calibration. So most everything there, as I mentioned when we started, those folks that are in other areas may not be aware, we've always had a PL4, but it's just been calibration scopes of accreditation. So I'm also the inspection program manager, 17020, and we formerly had work instruction 9 in place for inspection. That's going to become obsolete, and we are now going to have Appendix B and PL4, which will address scopes of accreditation for inspection bodies. So hopefully I got some of our 17020 folks online with us today. So as always, we define type A, type B, or type C inspection type, and that basically is your independence from the field which is being inspected. So the items that are subjected to your inspection, what is your level of independence? And these are also defined in 17020. And it's also subjected to assessments if you specify you're a type A, totally independent from the activity being inspected. That would be also subjected to the assessment. So we have fields, specific inspection field, which is a broad area of what the inspection body is being accredited for, such as examples of current items on PGLA scopes include bulk cargo, Legionella risk assessment, pressure vessels, or fire protection system, or fire resistant constructions. Something that we've added to inspection, just to provide some clarification in the area of non-destructive fields. So sometimes it's a head scratcher. Is it a test or is it inspection? So I worked with Doug Burge, one of our testing program managers at Perry Johnson, and we came up with this in this determination. Inspection is the examination of a product, processes, service, or installation of their design and determination of its conformity with a specific requirement or on the basis of professional judgment with the general requirements. Items would be inspected once all other activities have taken place, in which testing may very well be a prerequisite prior to the inspection taking place. Inspection activities would not include the actual testing of the specific substance, artifact, or sample. However, the examination of the items after the testing has been completed. The completed testing may be one area with which the inspecting activity would encompass. So this is basically the end results, not any testing that was involved prior to the final inspection is what we're trying to capture there in a nutshell. So type and ranges of inspection, it should be specific as to what is being inspected or detected by the inspection body within the field. Some examples could be perhaps your field is lifting, and type of ranges may include things like hoist or wrenches. Pressure vessels, more specifically, types could be boilers or specific pressure vessels, or excuse me, pressure equipment under the fields. Petroleum, crude oil, petroleum products, type of range, example could be perhaps tank gauging. And methods here. So specifications, standards, methods, or techniques used should clearly indicate what the inspection body is using to perform inspections. Some examples we have on our current scope include SM scopes under PJLA, ASME boiler and pressure vessel code specific to this section 1 through 22, ASME B31, for example, U.S. federal specifications can be listed. An IST special publication there. I believe that's perhaps a cybersecurity document. We even have something specified under probably the transport of goods, under the carriage of goods by seas under 46 USC, which is the United States Code. So that will, I believe, conclude Appendix B. We're going to switch gears now, and Tracy, are you on with us?
I am. Thank you, Mike. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. So everybody, hey, this is honored to have Tracy Stearns filling in for Matt today. She's Like I said, she's been instrumental and been going back and forth with getting PL4 revised. And hey, we're excited about it. We're going to have this one document covering all of our scopes of accreditation into PL4. So Tracy's going to go through the other remaining appendixes covered within PL4, starting with scopes. So Tracy, if you just say next, and I'll go ahead and move the slide. Tracy is at a conference right now and made time in her busy schedule to fill in for Matt. Thank you, Tracy.
All right. Thank you, Mike. And yeah, I apologize to everyone that Matt couldn't make it today. He had some, he's been traveling as well and had some difficulty getting on. So, but Mike, thank you for your presentation on calibration scopes and inspection. Like Mike said, you know, we decided that instead of having multiple policies on what we expect on scopes of accreditation, we decided to change BL4 just to a general document to cover all of our major scopes of activity. So I'm going to go through some changes that are related to testing. Also, testing also includes 15189 for medical. I'll talk a little bit on reference material scopes and PTP. Also, I wanted to mention that Mike had referred to ISO 17011. That is the standard that we are required to adhere to as an accreditation body, which includes the development of scopes. But also what drove us to creating this document was a revised document under ILAC G18 for scopes of accreditation. And that was developed because among the ILAC accrediting bodies that they felt the need to have such a document out because there's just little inconsistencies perhaps between all the accreditation bodies, you know, across the globe. So that was a big part of this change as well. Okay, so I want to start with testing. And this actually is a pretty big change for us as far as our scopes. So we have decided that we are no longer, one, it's not required unless there is a specifier or someone that requires the labs to have a range or a detection limit on their scope. So we are no longer going to be requiring that on testing labs scopes of accreditation. Right now, we're only going to require the field of test, the items, materials, or products tested, the component of their specific characteristic, the specification standard method, and the technology and technique used. So instead of the detection limit, if you are a currently accredited facility, right now you might have a column that says detection or range. So that's going to actually be replaced with your technology or technique used. Next slide. So here's an example of what the scopes will now look like. It's not a major change, but you can see there that there's no longer going to be a range. We did go in PL4, we did describe a little bit as well, you know, how we want the items, materials, and products tested in the component and characteristic, how much detail we want with that, and added some clarification. So what you're going to expect out of this is that we don't plan on when the policy comes out, everyone will be notified of the effective date. We don't plan on changing all of our testing scopes. Testing is one of our largest areas, so we would not have the resources to change everyone's scope right now. So by your reassessment is when you'll start seeing your scope being changed. You may also be asked to add a little bit more detail. Perhaps your scope is a little vague, which could fall into what I will get into next under flexible scope. So I encourage when it comes out, please go through it, please read it. And again, we'll be contacting you directly, but I just don't want you to be surprised when we say we no longer need the detection limit or range. If you want to keep it on there, we ask that you kind of explain why. We want to have consistent scopes. If there's a specifier, a regulator, government entity that's asking for it, then we will go ahead and keep it on your scope. But this actually is going to alleviate one. It's a lot of work on both parties, PGLA and the laboratory, to keep that up to date. And actually, if it's not up to date, we're a little bit at risk. You know, again, people are reviewing these scopes, and you know, again, it's they're looking at it and interpreting it as they want, and maybe it could be out to date. Perhaps your detection limit and range changes, and your scope's not updated. So I think overall, this will eliminate any risk for both parties, really, the clients and PGLA. Next slide. So currently we have the policy for testing, which is work instruction 8. And inside of that policy, we do have a section there for flexible scopes. And flexible scopes is not for everyone. So we encourage that any lab can get a flexible scope, but they have to meet the requirements of managing a flexible scope. So going into really what is this flexible scope, this could be on your certificate. You might have your field. So for example, chemical, you have the technology, say GCMS. You might not specify the test method you're using, because at any given time, you might have a different matrix that comes in, a different field, for example, like in the food area, that you might have to pick up and test quickly. And those are the types of labs that need to have a flexible scope, to where, you know, at any given time something can come in, they don't have that specific test method on their scope, but they have a flexible scope. So again, if laboratories choose this, they have to have a policy in place to be able to demonstrate to us that they're managing that. Mike, if you want to click to the next slide, please. So again, here's some examples. It could be an introduction of a new measurement range to be accredited, maybe a new version or modifications of an accredited or non-standard method, or introduction of a new method that is equivalent, to an accredited method using the same technology or technique. But if you notice here, a flexible scope is not based upon if you're picking up a new technology, a new piece of equipment. That has to be something that you would request through a scope expansion. So this is the ability to be able to change up your methods or maybe your matrix and be able to test on the spot without having to request us to come out for an expansion. Next slide. So in our document as well, and this is also in work instruction 8, but PL4 now has simplified the instructions on how to manage a flexible scope from a laboratory perspective, but also from the accreditation body perspective. So what we would ask, that you would be required to maintain a list of your scope items. You would have to show us annually when we come out for your assessment, records of verification or validations as necessary, or perhaps even PT studies, how you validated that you're capable of performing this. So we would be asking for that every year when we come out for the assessment. We also, if you're marked down as a flexible scope client, there will be some information that we'll request perhaps ahead of time as well, so your assessor can evaluate it. Next question, or next slide. Okay, so also what we've added now, we didn't have necessarily a work instruction before or really a policy on certificates or scopes of accreditation for reference material, which is 17034. Mainly the scope requirements were listed in an SOP that we had for the accreditation program. So we have now added this in PL4 as well. We will be modifying the format of reference material producer scopes based on 17034, which is section 712, for the inclusion of the approach to use to assign a property, property values. Next slide. So here is our current, or this is what the policy we'll have listed for reference material providers. Not much different in the first few categories, but if you see there on the far right, the approach used to assign property values, that will be required for you to provide in your scopes of accreditation. Okay, next slide. So similar to testing, the ILAC document also added clarification for reference material producers and that they also might be eligible or might want a flexible scopes. So here, this can be an example of introduction of a new product for an accredited class or type of reference material, introduction of a new range, or a new compound analyte using an accredited class or type of reference material, or again, a new version or a standard method, or for a test method used in the laboratory and referenced on the scope of accreditation. So reference material producers, we also will be allowing a flexible scope in that area as well. And those are the particular requirements that are examples of why someone might want one. Next slide. Next slide. So similar to testing, we will require the reference material producers to provide us information, a list of all the reference materials, so we're well aware of what they're performing under their accredited scope when they have this flexibility. They're going to have to do validation of any methods changed, ensuring that they have evidence of compliance to the 17034 standard, and they need to be able to show us those records as well. Next slide. We also added, just like reference material, we didn't have a work instruction or a policy on proficiency testing provider scopes. So this has now been added. So we, PTP is a program that we just started offering a few years ago. And we do have probably now, I would say about 10 accredited facilities, but the requirements for the scopes and how they should be laid out was similar to reference material just listed in our SOP for the PTP program. So we really haven't changed a lot as far as the requirements. We based it upon 1711 and also the new ILAC G18 document. Next slide. Here's an example. PTP, if some of you, if you're a laboratory, you're used to using PTP providers, but their scopes are a little bit different by not including necessarily a field. It's called a PT scheme. And then here is an example of what a scope should look like. So they're not very large scopes. And PTP providers, you know, most of them have very large scopes and offer various different PT items. So these, honestly, by default, PTP providers almost have a flexible scope anyway. So the ILAC document has described the ability to have a flexible scope and the allowance of it. So we'll be allowing that too, but I think for the most part, because there's very generic schemes and categories that, again, by default, PTP providers have a much more broad scope than you'll see in the testing labs. Next slide. So there will be an opportunity for PTP organizations to get a flexible scope and very similar to testing a reference material. This will give them the ability to be able to introduce maybe a new compound or components or analytes, introduction of a new product or a new range for an accredited scheme. Next slide. Okay, so PTP providers, again, will be responsible for maintaining a list of all PT schemes. Validation of any of those changes. They have to ensure they're also complying with 17043 and have records available. Okay, and the only thing that's been also I wanted to mention, 15189 does fall under our testing, so that has also been added. We are allowing flexible scopes for 15189 accredited facilities. That's for the accreditation of medical laboratories. And we'll be using the same process that we use for testing facilities. Okay, so with that, please make sure that if you're on this webinar, you do probably get our notifications. So you will be seeing a notification coming out on our updated policies. Not only have we updated PL4, which is this presentation, but we have updated PL3 and PL2. So that's traceability and measurement uncertainty policy. Not a lot of major changes there, but you will be seeing an update notification coming out with the effective date. So please make sure that you look for that and ensure you're downloading or you take a look at those changes, because we do assess to those and you will have to implement those within a certain period of time. Okay, so with that, I think that we have time for some questions. Here's a slide here. Matt was not able to attend today, but if there are some questions about proficiency testing scopes or reference material, anything like that, you can, there is his email. Mike's email is there as well. And yeah, I think we can go ahead and start answering any questions, Mike, if you've seen anything sure. Come in.
I think you just answered one of them, which was, can you advise on the schedule for updating PL4? Got another one. I don't know if you can see the questions or not, Tracy, but I believe it's about detection limits. Okay. Removing them from the scope is going, removing LODs from the scope is going to apply to accredited methods too. Assuming they're up there asking if removing detection limits are going to apply to the accredited methods as well, which I would assume that they would, because basically that's what's on the scope of accreditation is the methods by which they perform the testing by.
Yeah, I don't, not real clear on the question, but the detection limits, yes, they relate to the test method that's listed on your scope. It doesn't mean we're not going to be assessing that, and that's part of the assessment process to ensure you can reach particular limits and you can, you know, use the method by that technology. Things are obtainable. It doesn't mean we're not going to be assessing to that. It's just we're not going to be publishing them on the scopes unless you request it and there's a good reason to add it. But the test methods will always be on the scope of accreditation. That's not going anywhere.
All right. I'm assuming this next question is referencing the one you just dissertated on. Thank you. My question refers to the flexibility.
Oh, flexible scopes. Okay. So the method, flexible scopes, if we go back to that slide, does allow, and we don't have to, but there's a slide on that. If you take a look at flexible scopes, it could be an interchangeable methods. Your scope can be very limited to a very broad category. For example, I don't know, let's say chemistry, food testing, testing food products, maybe your food products, and then you can have the technology. So that gives you flexibility to test any food product. And you would have to be able to tell us what, when we come on site, what food products are you currently testing? And okay, it's using this technology, but you're going to use various industry methods or maybe your own internal SOPs for different matrices that different fields of food products. You would be able to still be considered accredited for those. You would just have to manage it and show us, you know, which ones have changed from year to year. You'll see like a lot of flexible scopes. One thing I like the fact that if I was a laboratory that, geez, that's great. I can do what I want to, really what I want to do, as long as it's under the same technology is listed under my scope. It gives me the ability to be able to just take a project on right away and don't have to worry about contacting PGLA to come out to do an assessment or even a doc review. That is the benefit, but the negative to it is that, scopes are publicized and a lot of people rely on laboratory scopes, to make a selection as well of what you're capable of doing. So if your scope is so generic, sometimes you might get looked past as well, as far as, can I use this lab for this? It's not specific enough, but the lab down the street, they specifically say they can do this test method, and that's what I'm looking for. So just be cautious if you're requesting it. That's what you have is a flexible, you have a flexible scope, and you might cause some people asking a lot of questions or might even have some doubts. A lot of regulatory groups, like for example, the FDA labs are accredited. So for them, they may need to have that flexible scope because they can have emergency issues come up where they, want to still become accredited and continue accreditation, but they need to be able to test quickly. So, take a look of, look at the policy when that comes out. Reconstruction Aid on our website actually specifies the instructions for flexible scope too, but it's a decision, that to think about as a laboratory and for your business. If you really want to, go that route. Any more questions?
I think you just answered the next question there, Tracy. They're asking, is PL4 updates will include updates for flexibility? Well, yes. And they asked, do we have today policies for flexibility? Which I didn't know if Work Instruction Aid addressed it or not, but you just said that it does. It does address it.
Yeah, it doesn't, and it doesn't require necessarily a policy. It just requires you to keep record, and so if you read through it, you'll see that you'll have to be able to keep your list. You're gonna have to, you may create your own policy internally on it too to make sure that it's really revalidating where you need to, or re-verification of a method to make sure it's appropriate, and that's a 17025 requirement anyway. So, yeah, take a look at it. And again, it's a decision, it's a business choice, of the laboratory as well. Just keep those things in mind about, how your scopes are really being used.
Okay, that's all the questions we have right now. Don't see anything else. Good questions there. So anything to add there, Tracy, before we sign off?
No.
Again, thanks for stepping in.
No problem. Thank you everyone for joining us today. And, please, I believe we have some more webinars coming up on some different 17025 topics, maybe in August.
Yep. So check our website.
Yep. It's on the website. And
if a question pops up to me, quite often after our presentation, after the fact, feel free to reach out directly to either myself or Matt. There's our email address in regards to today's presentation.
Yep. All right. Okay. Thank you, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah.
Take care. Bye-bye.